The next case for argument is 14-1508 MCOR v. Machia. Let me take a moment to get settled. Ready?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Tomasulo?
Tomasulo.
Tomasulo. Okay.
Everybody was here for them. takes a little bit of pressure
off. Not everyone.
Off.
We're still here.
that's important. May it please the Court, I'm Michael Tomasulo on behalf of the appellant, MCOR Corporation. Thank you for your time this morning, Your Honors. This case began with a misfire, and that misfire led the case to a reversible error. It's an obviousness case, and the Board's finding of obviousness rests exclusively, or at least extensively, on its conclusion that it would have been obvious to combine the Kikuchi reference with the four so-called annealing references in an effort to lower the resistance of the contact. The misfire occurred because in both the Machia's petition as well as the Board's order instituting the trial, they were demonstrably wrong in their reliance on the Nakamura reference to teach that annealing an aluminum-based contact would result in a lower contact resistance. Nobody believes that that was correct anymore, that position has been abandoned by both Machia and the Board.
I'm not sure I'm clear. The Board, you're challenging the Board's claim construction, but the Board here said that the claims don't require the low resistance, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
The board has found that. What I'm saying is that the Board's motivation to combine, that Machia advanced the reason to combine Kikuchi with the so-called four annealing references was to lower the resistance of the contact. That was the why. That was the supposed reason, Judge Prost, that they said you should anneal the contact in the first place, was to lower the resistance of the contact. And their key reference on that point was Nakamura. And that citation was erroneous and it's been abandoned. It was never taken up by Nichia's expert, and he confirmed that deposition that that's just simply wrong. That left a hole in the petition and it left a hole in the order instituting trial. And they relied on Luther to backfill that hole.
Right. And you're saying that was improper and the other side is saying you waived that argument.
That is correct. And would you like to directly address the waiver issue right now if you'd like? The waiver issue is wrong on several fronts. First of all, there was no requirement to move the board for a motion to exclude. The board's consistently said that a motion to strike or a motion to exclude is not the proper vehicle for trying to eliminate or exclude evidence that was believed to be improper in reply. For instance, in CBM 2013-0002, which is paper number 41, the board says, and this is also, I believe, this is a Judge Chang order, which is the same judge that was our judge. She said the board then indicated that a motion to strike as requested by the patent owner is not how the board determines that the matter raised by the patent owner should be considered in this case. The board would have no difficulty while in the ordinary course of writing the final decision to recognize whether the reply presented a new ground of unpatentability or raised new issues which should have been presented in the first instance within the original petition. Similarly, in IPR 2013-196, and this would be in paper 33, the board explained that a motion to strike or a motion to exclude is not the proper mechanism for raising the issue of whether a reply or a reply evidence was beyond the proper scope permitted under the rules.
Well, let's assume we agree that there's not a waiver problem.
Okay.
Why isn't there substitution of the Luther reference permitted by the board's regulations?
Well, I would say that if they wanted to substitute the Luther reference, there was a vehicle for them to do, and they didn't do it. And here's why. One, they didn't try to do it, and two, they didn't actually introduce it in evidence in the petition itself. They introduced it in opposition to the motion to amend. In the only context that Luther is even mentioned is in their citation to our expert, Dr. Gorski's testimony in their reply to our patent owner's response. In other words, they don't cite the Luther. The only mention where they actually refer to the Luther exhibit is in their opposition to our motion to amend. In other words, there was nothing to exclude because they didn't offer it into evidence at the in the conjunction with ground four, which was what the trial was about. We confirmed that at the hearing. We said we want to specifically say that we object to Luther or Mararka, which were being used as the ground in the opposition to the motion to amend. One objects to the extent that they're trying to offer that in ground four, and the judge says, okay.
But I'm a little confused. The board has a rule that allows you to respond, and they raise Luther in a response. And so the board found that it was properly considered because it was submitted in a response to your argument about other things. And the board thinks that's okay. That's its own interpretation of its regulations. Why don't we defer to the board's view on that?
Well, first of all, I guess the question is whether it was proper reply.
No, I think the question is the board thinks it was perfectly okay to use Luther because it was submitted in a reply to one of your arguments, that it didn't have to be raised in the petition in the first place.
It was not proper reply because it could have been relied on in the petition itself. It was not in reply to anything.
So do you think the board's rules seem to permit that? Do you think those rules are contrary to statute?
Well, I don't think that the board's rules permit that.
But the board says it does. And I mean, if it's the board interpreting its own regulations, don't we have to give deference to the board?
I don't think that they're interpreting their own regulations in any way that's consistent with the words of those regulations or the words of the statute. The statute says that the grounds for the trial are what are the grounds for the trial, and then they provide a specific vehicle, which I would submit they have a three-pronged vehicle to introduce new evidence, and I would submit that the use of a three-pronged vehicle to introduce new evidence, Judge Hughes, is evidence that is the only vehicle to introduce new evidence, and they didn't take advantage of that. And they never introduced it as evidence in the first place in the petition. In other words, if we had dropped the motion to amend in its entirety, then Luther's out of the equation altogether because it was only introduced in opposition to the motion to amend.
Setting aside Luther, why doesn't Shibata provide a motivation to combine?
Yeah, I'm glad you're asking that, Judge Bryson.
Setting aside the missing negative two.
Correct. Well, I mean, that's one.
There's nothing, it seems to me, to that after the board looks at it and says that was obviously a typographical error. As if it had that.
Yes, okay. I understand. There's a couple of issues. One, there's the why question. Why would you anneal a contact, right? What the point is that was in Nakamura, it said you anneal the contact to lower the contact resistance. Shibata doesn't say that. It just says that the contact was annealed and then they get to
end up with a low resistance.
Well, I mean, I would say that the contact has low resistance. There's no linkage of the steps. I mean, there's lots of steps in Shibata to form the device.
Maybe if that's enough to keep it from anticipating, that really looks like something that a person of skill and the art looking at that reference would say, aha, this is what they did. They did everything except have the platinum in the stack, and they ended up with the resistance that we're looking for. Why isn't that motivation combined?
Well, a couple of reasons. First of all, the motivation would be a why, right? And then they chose to have a five reference.
Not necessarily. You could have a reference that has, I have absolutely no idea why this works, but it works. That's a very strong motivation, it would seem to me, to go ahead and investigate along that line. The why is frequently irrelevant and unobtainable.
Let me say it to you this way then. They chose to have a five reference combination, and the majority of those references teach a way, they teach that you don't anneal a contact that has an aluminum base, because if you do that, you get device failure.
And then when you start talking about teaching a way, then you do run into Luther, and there's Luther is, to the extent that it was introduced just to deal with the teaching a way argument, it seems to me your argument that it shouldn't have been considered is a lot weaker.
Well, I would say that I disagree with that because what the reality is they chose those five references. They have to live with what's in the four corners of those five references. And with your very specific point on Shibata then, if you look at Fujimoto does extensive experimentation, including it says experimented with the contact of Shibata, and it says that invited a lowering or an increase in contact resistance. They basically, in a very extensive reference, Fujimoto, they took a look at Shibata and said, it doesn't work. And then they went on to extensively experiment, and the best that they got was 10 to the minus 4 in the contact resistance. And that, by Nichia's own definition, is a poor contact. And so I would say that the balance of those the balance of those references would leave out Nakamura, which provided a statement as to you would kneel to lower contact resistance. The balance of them all, they don't give you any reason to do anything to Kigadochi. Kigadochi doesn't teach it, that there's a problem with it. It doesn't say that it has poor contact resistance. It doesn't say that there's some defect in Kigadochi that needs to be cured by annealing, especially to get from Kigadochi to our contact. You have to extract 1 out of 10 different contacts that's disclosed in Kigadochi, because they have two different stacks they disclose, plus they say you could substitute the titanium, which is the base, or the molybdenum, which is the base layer of the stack. You could substitute that for any of 5 different metals that they identify.
Including aluminum.
But my point is to get from Kigadochi, you'd have to choose the aluminum one and then experiment it with by annealing. And so you need 2 steps to get to our contact.
And you've got annealing in this industry all over the place, something like 90% of the of the exemplars suggest annealing. So it's not as if you're talking about exposing it to radiation or something.
Well, you talk about annealing a specific type of contact. Annealing is a technique. There's no one who's saying that it's not a known technique, but you don't anneal contacts every time. There are contacts that are annealed. There are contacts that aren't. And then what you have is very specific.
But many, many of them are annealed.
Agreed. And many of them are not aluminum-based as well, and many of them don't terminate in gold. I mean, if we, you know, there's annealing is a technique. I will stipulate that it is going to be something that's available in any type of metallurgical analysis. But the question is, did they carry their burden to show that it would have been obvious to modify Kigadochi as taught or not taught by those 4 references? Nakamura says that you get big problems when you use he tried. He's a Nobel Prize winner, and he couldn't make it work. And then you go – so that's Nichia's own Nobel Prize winner. He started with aluminum, and he concludes it doesn't work. And then he chose titanium. That became the, quote, gold standard of NGAN contacts was Nakamura's contact, which was a titanium base. Then you look at, you know, their strongest prior art is in our background section, which is the admitted prior art. And that says it was known to anneal aluminum-based contact, but it led to device failure. And their expert says, well, that's pretty bad. Device failure is not good. And then if you look at Shibata and Fujimoto sort of taken together, what you get is that Shibata, even accepting the typo, says you can get to 10^-5, but then Fujimoto, which is an extensive reference, comes out and says, well, the best we can do is 10^-3 or 10^-4. And there's no teaching in Fujimoto. It says it's preferable to anneal, but there's no why.
Your argument on Shibata really seems to come down, if I'm understanding you correctly, and this was consistent with your brief, to saying that you think Fujimoto is more persuasive than Shibata, and therefore we really ought to take Shibata off the table.
Well, what I'm saying is they chose to have a 5 reference obviousness combination. They have to show why that works to lead to the conclusion of obviousness. It's not – I mean, they could have made a different combination.
But the board is in a position to be able to say that we think, looking at both Shibata and Fujimoto, that we don't think we have to throw Shibata out the window, and they didn't.
Well,
so, we're in a position now of saying, was there substantial evidence to support the board's conclusion that – among other things, that Shibata was a usable reference for purposes of deciding when this motivation combined.
Well, I would think that the board concluded that it wasn't sufficient. Otherwise, why would it have relied on Luther? I mean,
it's never a problem when a court decides to cite multiple pieces of evidence, even if it concludes that one piece of evidence would have been sufficient. I mean, it's a way of saying belt and suspenders or whatever you want to say, but that's frequently occurred. We would never accept the argument that the fact that a court cited 2 references means that neither alone was sufficient.
Well, that's not what I'm saying, of course, Your Honor.
It sounded like what you were saying.
I hear what you're saying. Let me try a better way of phrasing it.
Right.
If a court cites – it relies on inadmissible evidence, I don't think that we can presume that it did so because it was – you know, that it's harmless. I mean, that's what a remand is for, to see if they can reach a conclusion that they could have found the patent to be obvious under the correct claim constructions and without the inadmissible Luther reference.
Why don't we turn to the government and we'll keep you by the time.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Smith?
So I am Matthew Smith, Turner Boyd LLP, representing the Appalachian Nichia Corporation. Chief Judge Prost just said, why don't we turn to the government? We can, of course,
I'm sorry. I misspoke.
Not a problem at all, Your Honor.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you very much.
Yes,
you go. May it please the court. The solicitor's office will take the last 5 minutes of the live time to talk about the Luther procedural issues. So let me talk about the simplest version of the case, which is let's say Luther is out for the sake of argument. Let's say MCOR's claim construction is governing the case. What happens then? And we would submit to you that you can and should affirm the case, even under those two assumptions. And you can do that under MCOR's claim construction because, as the board found, the limitation that MCOR seeks to import into Claim 1 is effectively the limitation of Claim 15. And the board found Claim 15 unpatentable over the ground four references, and I think properly so. The case that the board relied on and that we put forward in the petition is much simpler, of course, I think, than Mr. Thomasulo makes it out to be. It is a single reference that teaches almost everything in Claim 1, the Kitaguchi reference, teaches the semiconductor layer, gallium nitride, N-type, teaches the four-layer contact, aluminum, titanium, platinum, gold, teaches that the titanium and platinum layers are barrier layers in the same sense as the 215 patent, which was something MCOR said was a key to the patent's breakthrough in the briefing at top page 15 in the blue brief. The only thing that the board had to decide was whether under Claim 1 it was obvious to anneal, and under Claim 15 whether it was obvious to anneal to get to a low contact resistance. The four references that were cited were additive, as I think the questioning brought out. That is, we didn't need four references to teach four different claim elements. All of them were directed to showing that annealing was a very common technique in the industry. Professor Schubert's testimony, which was mentioned during the questioning, still stands as undisputed. 90% of all contacts were annealed. So this is something in the foremost of the mind of a person of ordinary skill in the art. And the references teach that it was advantageous, as we made out the case in our petition, which is on appendix sites, pages 107 to 110. I think Mr. Thomasulo...
Advantageous for purposes of increasing the conductivity? Or advantageous for a variety of reasons, which is why it's used in a number of settings?
Both. Advantageous for a variety of reasons and for decreasing contact resistance specifically.
What is the sum total of your evidence that annealing is advantageous for reducing resistance, increasing conductivity?
Thank you, Your Honor. So first of all, we have the testimony of Professor Schubert on that issue, which is appendix pages 156 and 157, who said that annealing was commonly used to reduce contact resistance, and the person of ordinary skill in the art had the ability to do that. Second, in the admitted prior art, the very first sentence of the admitted prior art says, aluminum was a typical metal used to form a low-resistance contact to N-type gallium nitride on annealing. And the second page of the admitted prior art says that aluminum post-metallization to N-type gallium nitride was either aluminum, titanium, or titanium aluminum, and annealing is used to minimize the contact resistance. And that seems pretty strong. I think even if the board had only relied on the admitted prior art in combination with Kitaguchi, that would be substantial evidence to uphold the board's finding that there was a motivation to anneal a contact and to lower the contact resistance through the process of annealing. But we also have the Shibata reference, and the Shibata reference, as noted, is a very similar kind of contact. It has an aluminum base layer, a gold top layer, and a barrier in between to prevent the diffusion. That was also annealed and connected to, as the board found on page 32 of its decision, the benefits that are stated in paragraph 27 of Shibata, which was good wire bonding, good ohmic contact, and a contact resistance of 10 to the minus 5 Ω centimeters squared. And I will...
Without the squared.
Oh, sorry, yes. Without the squared. I was found to be a typo, I think, by the board with substantial evidence support. And I think that Mr. Thomasulo is correct that the way that is literally stated is simply we put the layers down on top of the semiconductor,
then we
annealed, and here's what we got.
Without saying, and the annealing took us from here to here.
Yes, I think that's correct. Okay, but I think the admitted prior art does get you there, right? I mean, the inventors are saying we typically in the prior art use annealing to lower the contact resistance or even to minimize the contact resistance, which is what they say on page A172. So that seems a very solid evidence that the board could have relied on reasonably and meets the substantial evidence standard for the motivation to combine.
Do you want to address Mr. Thomasulo's argument that Fujimoto essentially undermines the utility of Shibata because of the more extensive investigation, which produced not the same results.
Yes, thank you. I will address that in a couple of different ways. First of all, I think, as came out in the questioning, the context of your review is important. It is, on that question, a substantial evidence review of what a person of ordinary skill in the art would have read out of the totality of references. And they have arguments based on the text of Fujimoto, but the text of Shibata says that Shibata got a different result. The board was reasonable to rely on the plain text of Shibata, and I think also reasonable to discount the inference that MCOR attempts to draw from Fujimoto. Because ultimately, Fujimoto recommended annealing of an aluminum-based gold-topped contact. The specification actually says the contact is preferably annealed at 400 degrees centigrade. So it is difficult, I think, to infer that a person of ordinary skill in the art would read Fujimoto and come to the conclusion that we should not read, that we should not anneal the Kitaguchi contact. I think it would be more of a departure from Fujimoto if a person of ordinary skill in the art read the Fujimoto patent and said, hey, let's not anneal Kitaguchi, right? Because 90% of all prior art contacts are being annealed. We have Shibata annealing the aluminum-based contact. We have Fujimoto annealing the aluminum-based contact. We've got the Ferrazzi reference, which was brought up in our petition and brought up by MCOR as well, annealing an aluminum contact. If you want to talk about Luther, Luther certainly does the same thing. But I think Luther's disclosure, if I'm going to address that for a second, is actually just about identical to the admitted prior art disclosure. In other words, both references say that if you have aluminum on N-type gallium nitride and you anneal it, the contact resistance goes down. Now, Luther actually gives a specific value for the contact resistance. The admitted prior art just says low resistance or minimize the contact resistance. But presumably, since that's the provisional application leading to the 215 patent, it means the same thing the 215 patent means when it says low contact resistance. So Luther, in that sense, is cumulative, I think, to the admitted prior art, quite cumulative to Shibata with the question of the connection between annealing and the low contact resistance, which is not quite clearly as made out as it is in the admitted prior art. But the board relied on both Shibata and the admitted prior art, both for the finding that annealing would have been obvious under Claim 1 and for the finding that a person of ordinary skill in the art could have annealed down to 10 to the minus 5th ohm centimeter squared for Claim 15, which, by the way, is agreed to be not all that exceptional of a contact resistance in that time. We have Professor Schubert's testimony in paragraph 5 of his first declaration, which is at appendix page A157, where Professor Schubert says, look, this is in that time frame, this is the middle of the road contact. It's just about the dividing line between good and bad. There are plenty of contacts that were lower than that in that time frame. And it's just not unexpected that one would achieve 10 to the minus 5th, given the technology that people had available to them to make these prior art contact metal stacks in the year 2000, as opposed to, say, in the year 1993 when the Nakamura work started.
Thank you.
Thank you. I could cede the rest of my time to the solicitor if that's possible. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. MCOR tells this court that the Luther reference was inadmissible, but an admissibility decision must first be considered by the lower tribunal, here the board. MCOR never gave the board the opportunity because MCOR never filed a motion to exclude as required by the board's regulations. 37 CFR 42.64 is crystal clear on the correct procedure. It provides for a two-step process. First, a party objecting to evidence must serve its objections on the other party. Then, to the extent there is no agreement between the parties, the objecting party must file a motion to exclude with the board. Section 42.64C says a motion to exclude evidence must be filed to preserve any objection. The board in IPR proceedings relies heavily on paper submissions. This is reflected in the board's scheduling order, which is at 8A20278, which provides dates for the briefings for motions to exclude. And the board in its final written decision not only addresses the merits of a case, but also rules on motions to exclude. Here the board did just that at JA 57-63. It addressed the motions to exclude filed by each party. MCOR's argument that it had nothing to move to exclude lacks merit. First, MCOR is arguing that Luther is inadmissible for a particular purpose, that it is admissible as to any issue concerning the original claim. That is the very subject of a motion to exclude and or motion to eliminate, however you characterize it. Second, MCOR objected to Luther and its objections. It served on Nichia. So MCOR certainly knew how to object to the use of Luther in the context of the original claim. Third, MCOR's failure to move to exclude appears to have been a strategic decision. MCOR embraced and specifically addressed Luther. In its reply in support of its motion to amend, MCOR relied on Luther, and not only as to the amended claim, but as to the original claim. And this is shown at pages A768 to 771. Thus, MCOR has waived its argument that Luther is not admissible and should not be considered by the board. If the court does consider the argument, however, the governing statute and regulations establish that the board's consideration of Luther in response to its teaching away was proper. I just would like to point out that statute contemplates that there is discovery through the IPR proceedings, and there's regulations about discovery, and especially expert declarations and expert depositions are considered, and that is how Luther came up in this context. And if you look at the board's decision, it is clear how they used Luther. They used it only in response to a teaching away argument. Their ultimate decision on patentability is about the same combination of references that is raised in the petition. This is at pages A16, A33, A49. The board is not relying on Luther for the determination of unpatentability. And as the board steps through the prior art on pages A17 through A21, it is describing those same references that are mentioned in the petition and not Luther. And again, when the board analyzes the claim requirements, the board is relying on those same references, not Luther. The board only addresses Luther when it is explaining all the shortcomings of the teaching away argument. The board is thoroughly addressing the arguments that are presented to it in the various papers, but its ultimate conclusion on obviousness at A49 is the same combination of references that Nichia identified in its petition, which does not include Luther. And I just want to point out that the two board decisions that counsel raised for the first time this morning, the parties in those cases flagged the issues well in advance for the board, which MCOR failed to do here. If the court doesn't have any questions, thank you.
Your Honor, if I may address a few of the points that were raised by my friends. With respect to, I believe what I heard was that Mr. Smith said that Professor Schubert at page 156 and 157, which is paragraph 52 to 55 of his declaration, that was in response to your question, is that there is some evidence from him that annealing decreases contact resistance. I don't see that that's what this says. When I've read it, it says it talks about annealing and it talks about contact resistance, but there's no linkage. He's not saying, you know, it was well known to use annealing to decrease contact resistance. Their argument amounts to that because annealing was known, it's always obvious to anneal. And maybe that is, I don't know, that doesn't sound reasonable to me, because what I hear from the references is, sure, you can anneal it, and we've tried it, but it doesn't work, and it causes problems. And in that instance, I don't look at it as a teaching way. I look at it as a teaching of the reference. It's saying, when you anneal aluminum, bad things happen, and that's the result of this. And so when I look at the references, I don't look at it as just a teaching away. I look at it as, what is the teaching of the reference? It says, we tried this, and it didn't work. We tried this, and it wasn't good. Nakamura, Nobel Prize winner, says, aluminum can hardly form an ohmic contact on NGAN. The admitted prior art says, yeah, it was known to reduce contact resistance by annealing an aluminum-based contact, but that leads to device failure. And then Fujimoto, you know, it gets to a contact where they say that the resistance level, they call it 10 to the minus fifth, is a run-of-the-mill contact. I think what they really mean is what Professor Schubert says, that's the dividing line. If you're higher than that, it's bad. He calls it a poor contact. And so Fujimoto, they work through, I mean, it's a 20-column reference, and it's all about contacts. They experiment with dozens, I think 45 different contacts, and the best that they can do with any of them is in the 10 to the minus 4 range, and that's with a copper-based contact. With respect to Shibata, it's two paragraphs. It says that, you know, they It predates Fujimoto, and it says, we did A, B, and C, which included annealing, which included an aluminum-based contact. It's a very easy recipe to follow, and the people at Fujimoto said, we tried it experimentally, and we found it didn't work. And then with respect to Ferraci, which my colleague talked about, Ferraci says when you anneal, you increase the resistivity of aluminum. I mean, sure, you can anneal aluminum, but Ferraci says it's bad. It invites an increase in the resistivity. Nakamura says you can hardly form an aluminum-based contact on NGAN.
The admitted prior art is inconsistent with that, right? The admitted prior art says, yes, you lower, but you increase the risk of device failure.
Yes, you
can hardly cite Ferraci for the proposition that it increases resistance when your own admitted prior art says it lowers resistance.
Well, what I would say is that Ferraci says that it. I mean, I'm not citing it for a proposition. I'm just saying what it says.
That's what it says. But since you admit in your own prior art that your own admitted prior art that it doesn't have that effect, it seems to me that I'm not. It's not terribly useful to me to look at Ferraci and say, oh well, that indicates it's not obvious.
Well, I'm just pointing out that what he said about it was wrong. That it doesn't say that you should anneal aluminum. My point is that the references don't say anything good happens, or that the combination of things that happen is negative when you anneal aluminum, and that's the teaching of the references. That's what I would stipulate. As far as the
final thought, because your time is expired.
Okay, well then that's good enough for me then. Thank you for your time, Your Honor.
Thank you. We thank all counsel on the case.